Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, June 26th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. We'll begin with a mini editorial from William F. Burroughs of Sioux City. And he writes, "Now that the Woodbury County Sheriff has hired a private attorney from the Class Law Firm to render an opinion on deputy pay, who will Class be billing for services rendered? The sheriff personally, or the taxpayers of Woodbury County?" Again, this was the opinion of William F. Burroughs of Sioux City. Our article we'll begin with is headlined, "Outgoing Sioux City School Superintendent Paul Gausman Answers Questions from the Journal." Superintendent Paul Gausman will end his 14-year tenure with the Sioux City Community School District this week. Shortly thereafter, he will begin his dream job as a superintendent in Lincoln, Nebraska. Gausman, a Nebraska native, replacing Steve Joel, who announced in September that he would step down after 37 years. "This just happened to be the year, and I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity to apply, interview, and be selected," Gausman said previously. The 55-year-old University of Nebraska Lincoln alum started his career as a student teacher at Lincoln Southeast High School and taught at Lincoln Northeast, where he also served as the associate band director. Among his Sioux City accomplishments, Gausman pointed to growing the four-year graduation rate to 90%, establishing a career pathway program for middle and high school students centered on over 35 career fields, expanding magnet initiatives in schools, and developing groundbreaking anti-bullying policies. Under his leadership, the Sioux City District also built new elementary schools and added science centers at each of its three high schools. In 2014, he was named Iowa Superintendent of the Year. The Journal sat down with Gausman to ask about his time with Sioux City Schools and his future with Lincoln Schools before his last day, June 30th. Question: how did you find out about the job here, and then what was the process like? "For a period of about 8 or 9 years, I lived in Sioux Falls, but most of my family still lived in the Omaha area. For every kind of vacation or holiday time, like 4th of July, Memorial Day, Labor Day, they would drive halfway and we would drive halfway, and we would always meet in Sioux City. I thought, if Sioux City School District ever comes open as a superintendent's position, I am going to apply. They probably won't hire me, but I'm going to apply." In 2008, that's what happened. Larry Williams decided to retire. I put my name in just to see what might happen. It was a challenge back then because I was leading a district about the size of Sergeant Bluff, with about 1,200 or 1,300 students. I thought moving to a 14,000 students district would be a lot, and it was, but they took a chance on that. I think we've had a good run of 14, almost 15 years, and I'm very, very proud to have served this community. My wife Susie and I thought when we moved here that we would only be here for about 3 years, but this town has a way of growing on you a little bit. Question: when you first came to the district, what were some of the things that you noticed at first? Answer: I did a substantive review of the perspective of the district from community leaders, parents, students, and staff. The school board was very clear with me at that time in 2008. They had about 3 or 4 things that they wanted me to do. Number one, we needed to balance the budget. The district needed to reduce spending by about $2.5 million that first year alone. That was out of a general fund budget of about $170 million. That was the year when the real estate bubble bust and a lot of economic hard times came. Then Governor Chet Culver brought back to the state government 10% of the funding they had given to the school district, so another $2.5 million had to be reduced from the budget. So in that first year that I was here, we had to reduce the budget by about $5 million. We did it without laying off staff. We did it through a process of attrition and some early retirement and those sorts of things. But we made our way through that. I'm proud that we've presented a balanced budget each year moving forward from that very difficult year. The second thing that the school board indicated needed to occur was that we needed to speed up the rate of building projects. At that time, the penny sales tax in Iowa had just gone statewide. They had just built West Middle, North Middle, and East Middle, and they had started but not yet completed Leeds and Unity Elementary Schools. And they had already finished Irving Elementary, but they wanted to build more schools faster. In my 14 years here, we have built 18 buildings. Some of our renovation and reconstruction projects. Number 19 and number 20 are underway but not complete. Number 19 will be the Vibe Academy. That's a space for the teachers. Number 20 will be the trades building on the Harry Hopkins campus. The third thing the board asked me to do was get involved in the community in a bigger way than maybe had been done before. We did a lot of work with the Chamber of Commerce, a lot of work with United Way, and with a lot of the agencies that support the school district. I'm very proud of that work here. Finally, the board asked me to work diligently to bring this town together in ways that it had not been before. We did a lot of work with that. I think the thing that broke that down the most was the development and implementation of our career programs for kids, our career academy. We now serve in our career programs about 4,000 kids a year. They come from 17 different high schools in 3 different states. And the next question, what would you say your biggest achievement while here would be? Answer. I would say probably the increase in the graduation rate in this district. When I moved here in 2008, our graduation rate was just over 70% and our dropout rate was just under 8%. That just wasn't acceptable. Truly, the only acceptable graduation rate is 100% and the only acceptable dropout rate is 0%. But today, our graduation is at or near 90% and I'm proud of that growth. The team worked hard to make that happen. Our dropout rate is under 2% at 1.85%. We've still got more work to do, but it's a good start. And question, what was the most challenging part of your tenure here? Answer, the most challenging part was navigating the pandemic. It was challenging for everybody. When the pandemic first hit, we knew that it was likely schools were going to close. We learned on a Sunday night that the governor was closing schools for Monday morning. And from that point forward, it was so challenging because the information on COVID was changing nearly every hour. A few weeks went by and it was changing maybe every few hours. And then a few weeks went by and it was changing every day or so. And then a few more weeks went by and it was changing a little slower and a little slower. But at the beginning, we could not educate our students virtually and digitally. Buying devices was something we did quickly, but that was the easy part. If the students cannot get to connectivity, the computer does them no good. How the team stepped forward and implemented mobile hotspots where they drive buses and vans into neighborhoods so the kids could get on the internet and continue to learn was amazing. Our food service department was so incredible. We'd normally serve 2,000 to 3,000 meals a day in the summer. During the height of the pandemic, we were closer to 7,000 meals a day, and that was so hard to manage and make happen. I would say we came out of it better than we went in, and I think we're better as an agency providing services to our community and our students because of it. I don't wish we'd go through that again. It was very, very difficult. But the goal for any leader in any organization is that you come out of something so challenging and so troubling with better systems in play, and I think we have done that. Question, how does it feel knowing this date you're going to Lincoln is so close? Answer, it's kind of sad because there are just so many friendships, professional friendships and personal friendships that we've grown here while we've been here in Sioux City. I pledged to the board and to the community that I was going to finish strong, and that's what I'm working diligently to do. But I am excited as well about the new adventure that awaits. My wife and I have always referred to our marriage as Paul and Susie's excellent adventure. We didn't think it would take us on this big of a move at this time in our journey, but it has. I'm very excited about the adventure that awaits. And the question, final thoughts? Answer, I'm very thankful to Sioux City, the Sioux City community, Sioux City Schools, and the school board for what they've offered and what I've been able to do. I know that this community has made an extraordinary investment in the schools and in the people who work in these schools. It has been my desire and pledges to return that investment to the community with improved educational practices and heightened graduation rates and heightened student achievement. I wish everyone the best as they look forward to building the new strategic plan for this district in the future. And I look forward to watching the great things that are happening in Sioux City as time goes forward. Iowa lawmakers poised to restrict abortion access. Now that the U.S. Supreme Court has struck down Roe v. Wade, the landmark case that 50 years ago established the fundamental right to abortion, Iowa lawmakers are free to dramatically reduce or outlaw the procedure in the state. The reversal of the 1973 case puts the power back into the state's hands to decide the future of abortion access for its residents, meaning the ruling's impact will vary state by state. According to the Guttmacher Institute, at least 26 states are certain or likely to ban abortion in the near future. In Iowa, where Republican leadership has attempted for years with some success to restrict abortion, access to the procedure is likely at risk. Iowa Republicans, including Governor Kim Reynolds, heralded the ruling and vowed to continue to protect the unborn. No restrictions went into effect in Iowa with the court ruling, and abortion remains legal in the state up until 20 weeks. Planned Parenthood clinics across Iowa and the Emma Goldman Clinic in Iowa City remain open and patient care continues. However, that's not true for other states. Trigger laws in North Dakota and South Dakota, passed in anticipation of the ruling, went into effect Friday, news reports showed. The Iowa GOP applauds the ruling. Reynolds lauded the court for upholding the enduring truth that all human beings, without exception, are created equal. By that measure, today's historic decision is clearly one such moment, Reynolds said in a statement. But the fight for life is not over. As governor, I won't rest until every unborn Iowan is protected and respected. Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, echoed Reynolds, stating the court restored a fundamental truth Iowa Republicans have always known, life is precious. Iowa House Republicans will continue to protect the innocent lives of unborn children, Grassley said in a statement. Reynolds and legislative leaders did not respond to messages Friday as to whether they would call a special session of the Iowa legislature to take up a new abortion law. Republican leaders in the legislature previously have pushed for further abortion restrictions in Iowa. In 2020, they passed a proposal, which was signed into law, that enacted a 24-hour waiting period before obtaining an abortion. The federal ruling also follows the Iowa Supreme Court decision last week to overturn a 2018 ruling that the state's constitution had provided a fundamental right to abortion. In the 182-page ruling released June 17th, Justice Edward Mansfield wrote the previous ruling insufficiently recognizes that future human lives are at stake. It sent the case back to a lower court for reconsideration, but the decision was a dramatic reversal of precedent in Iowa. Other Republican policymakers reacted to Friday's news, praising the federal court. I'm proudly and adamantly pro-life. This decision reflects the science, will save lives, and rightly returns policymaking power back to the people and their elected officials, U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said in a statement. Republican Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley echoed Ernst's statement, describing the reversal as a correction of a flawed legal analysis. This ruling does not ban the practice of abortion, but instead empowers the people, through their accountable elected representatives, to make common sense policy decisions. It takes policymaking out of the hands of unelected judges, Grassley wrote. Iowa Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson of Marion said the decision will save countless lives. In Congress, I will continue to champion pro-life policies and work to support expecting mothers and their babies, Hinson said. Moving to the Iowa Democrats' vow to fight back. To abortion providers and other supporters, the decision was a serious blow to women's reproductive freedoms. In a call with reporters, Planned Parenthood North Central State's president and chief executive office, Sarah Stolz, described the ruling as devastating and shattering a moment for women. Politicians are now in charge of our bodies in ways that they were not yesterday, Stolz said. Planned Parenthood, Iowa's largest abortion provider, emphasized abortions are continuing in states where it remains legal to do so. Organization leaders say they are hiring more staff and funneling resources to those states in anticipation of an influx of women traveling from out of state to seek abortion. We have been preparing for months and months to make sure that we're able to take care of patients, Stolz said. ACLU of Iowa Legal Director Rita Bettis Austin said, in the face of this shocking and dangerous decision, we will not give up the fight for abortion rights. Iowa Democrats vowed the fight to protect reproductive rights in Iowa is not over, stating Reynolds and Iowa Republicans will do everything in their power to outlaw abortion in our state. Iowa Democrats will continue to fight for every Iowan's right to decide for themselves if, when, and with whom they want to have a family, Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Ross Wilburn said during a call Friday with reporters. Today, when I woke up, I had freedom, more than my mother had, said U.S. Representative Sidney Axne, Iowa's lone Democrat in Congress. And in the middle of the day, I now have less freedom than my mom had. This is not what America wants, Axne said. America has said clearly that women's choice, women's ability to control their own health care decisions, is strictly to be between themselves, their family, and their doctor. According to the latest Gallup poll, more than 8 in 10 Americans believe abortion should be legal to some degree, and a majority did not want Roe v. Wade overturned. At the same time, the country remains far from unified on the extent to which abortion should be legal, according to Gallup. Democrats said Friday's ruling will not keep women from getting an abortion, but rather make abortions less safe for those without the means to travel to surrounding Midwestern states where abortion access has been upheld. So what this will do is just hinder Americans once again from the opportunity, from the decision to make their own health care decisions, from their ability to build their opportunities for their families and their careers, Axne said. She also pointed to a solo concurring opinion from Justice Clarence Thomas, stating the court should reconsider rulings protecting contraception, same-sex relationships, and same-sex marriage. This is the tip of the iceberg for the Republican Party and starts with taking away the right that women have in this country, she said. We'll now move to the opinion page, and our first one is a note from the publisher. Look for free access to website this week. How's this for a 4th of July surprise? From June 28th through July 4th, we will have unlimited and free access to our website at siouxcityjournal.com. Presented in partnership with Guarantee Roofing, this is a way for you to get all of that Saturday in the Park and 4th of July content, including previews, videos, photo galleries, stories, and reviews. You will also be able to follow along when you're at the concert, tracking what's going on in places you are not. We want to thank Cherise Yanni, who's one of our regulars, for making this possible. Since our inception, the Sioux City Journal has partnered with local businesses across our region to deliver the best in news coverage, advertising, and community sponsorships. Our greatest assets, by far, are the local communities we serve and the people just like you who live in them. With a great partner like Guarantee Roofing, we can present unlimited access for you and your families to stay up to date on all the events, news, and information you need as you plan and gather for the holiday. This past year, we have seen record-setting trends in page views and users who are accessing our content, both in our printed newspaper and at the SiouxCityJournal.com. When you log on, you can expect robust local content, photo galleries, videos, and much, much more. During this coming week, you can catch up on much of the content you may have missed in the past few months. Our hope is that you enjoy all that the Sioux City Journal has to offer, and if not already a member, that you'll join us. Thanks to Guarantee Roofing, this year's 4th of July got a little brighter. Starting Tuesday, sample that great content and see what you have been missing. And now we have opinion from the Sioux City Journal, with summer reasons for thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs down. To Sioux City's crumbling infrastructure, a 110-year-old water main broke on Pierce Street Tuesday, causing damage again to both the Orpheum Theater and the city's Wilbur Alfs Public Library. It was the third such water main break in the vicinity in the past year. Bottom line, fix it. Next thumbs down. To this summer's dry, rain-free weather, according to Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, almost all of northwest Iowa is under its 30-day average for rainfall, and most of Woodbury County is two 2.25 to 3 inches below its 30-day average of rainfall for the week ending June 23rd. Please send rain. To thumbs up to Saturday in the park. With no pipes to burst, Saturday's big festival should be one worth seeing. Slated to start at noon at Grandview Park, the 2022 festival features the Avett Brothers, Buddy Guy, Fet Rop, and more music, arts, and food than you can shake a grilled turkey leg at. To the city, and then another thumbs up, to the city for having a normal number of municipal swimming pool lifeguards this season. A pay raise helped the situation, but it was necessary to maintain what we believe is an essential recreation summer amenity. And then thumbs up to the boys and girls of summer slugging it out on hot, dusty ball fields. A big thumbs up to the Sioux City Fast Pitch Softball Association for restoring Sioux City's historic covered park ball field. The once glorious fast pitch diamond had been on its heels for several years, but is now fairly bustling with activity, including the sanctioned high school ball games. We'll now move to the article by one of the Sioux City Journal's regulars, and today's is Cherise Yanni of Sioux City, who is the owner and managing partner of Guarantee Roofing, Siding, and Insulation Company. She serves on the Siouxland Initiative Executive Committee, the Orpheum Theater Preservation Board, the Orpheum Theater Endowment Board, and the Iowa Department of Transportation Commission. And her article headline is, "Could Going Green Really Cost Us in the Long Run?" With change comes unintended consequences, especially when a monumental alteration is happening to our infrastructure at a very fast pace. Electric cars, wind turbines, solar panels, what are the trade-offs? Will some of the new or expanded resources meet our needs? Are they as much or more harmful to our environment? Are we putting more children and adults at risk for serious or terminal diseases? I wrote about this over a year and a half ago, but the information is pertinent today, such as the cost to dispose of wind turbine blades, the cost of mining lithium and cobalt, and where the minerals are being dug up for use in batteries. Solar panels have environmental issues because many components that are mined can cause lung disease, and they are linked to chemical pollution. Some of my concerns: what minerals does it take to build a battery for an electric car? How much dirt has to be moved to get enough lithium and cobalt for batteries? How much danger are children or adults in that are mining the minerals? Could they die from a terminal illness caused from inhaling the materials, or die from an accident, especially in countries that do not have safety laws? According to Mark P. Mills' article, Mines, Minerals, and Green Energy, in the Manhattan Institute report, left out of the discussion is any serious consideration of the broad environmental and supply chain implications of renewable energy. He went on to say, all energy-producing machinery must be fabricated from materials extracted from the earth. No energy system is actually renewable, since all machines require the continually mining and processing of millions of tons of primary materials and disposal of hardware that inevitably wears out. Compared with hydrocarbons, green machines entail on an average a tenfold increase in quantities of materials extracted and processed to produce the same amount of energy. By expanding today's usage of green energy from 4% to, say, even 50% of an unprecedented increase in mining for the minerals will radically exacerbate our environmental and labor challenges. As you know, we are dependent upon China and developing nations for the majority of the minerals. This makes us very vulnerable. Yes, President Biden wants more of the minerals to be mined in the United States. Yes, we have million mineral reserves worth trillions of dollars. However, we are currently 100% dependent upon importing at least 17 necessary minerals. Another 29 we import over half to meet our domestic obligations. MidAmerican Energy is putting up wind turbines and will be, if not already, building solar panel fields to generate electricity. They are probably one of the most prepared energy companies in the state of Iowa and the country. According to the Manhattan Institute, building the solar panels and wind turbines to generate electricity, batteries for the electric cars, takes on average 10 times the amount of materials than does machinery using hydrocarbons to deliver the same amount of energy to our nation. A single electric car contains more than 1,000 smartphone batteries. A single blade on a wind turbine has more plastic than 5 million smartphones. And a field of solar panels that can power one data center uses more glass than 50 million phones. As far as replacing hydrocarbons with green machines will cause the mining of the critical minerals to erupt. A single electric car weighing 1,000 pounds requires excavating and processing 500,000 pounds of material such as dirt. If you average that over a battery's life, for every mile driven, the electric car uses 5 pounds of Mother Earth. A combustion engine consumes approximately 0.2 pounds of liquid per mile. Ironically, in order to build the green machines, oil, natural gas, and coal are needed to produce the concrete, steel, plastics, and purified minerals for them. It takes the equivalent of 100 barrels of oil to build one battery that can store the equivalent of one barrel of oil. If things continue from now to 2050, the amount of worn-out solar panels will constitute double the tonnage of all today's global waste, along with over 3 million tons per year of non-recyclable plastics from worn-out turbine blades. And by 2030, more than 10 million tons per year of batteries will be garbage. This begs many questions. Will the grid, new or old, be able to support the demands of drivers' needs for electric energy without rolling blackouts? You will not find charging stations in a rest stop on federal highways because it is not lawful to sell fuel or electric energy at them. Just as you do today, you will have to stop at a charging station that is owned by private enterprise. How much time is going to be added to your trip to charge your vehicle? How much money is it going to cost you? Is the price a concern to you? What will the grid be able to support for the United States? Will you need a backup system for your home or businesses? The questions are worth considering. And again, this was an article by Charisse Yanni of Sioux City. We'll now move to the sports page, and we'll have time for one story before the half hour. This one is the headline, "The Win is the Best Part." Entering the fall of her senior year, Hinton High School senior Jaden Case was rehabbing a shoulder injury that kept her out of volleyball. Her softball season was in question, but Case wanted to play in the summer. Instead of getting down and taking time off, she joined cross country to stay in shape and continued to think of ways to improve her game. "I tore my shoulder last year and I worked really hard this summer," Case said. "I went to a lot of physical therapy and I honestly tried a new sport because volleyball wasn't going to be able to work out. I did cross country and I gave credit to my cross country coach, Craig Hoffman, because he definitely got me back into shape and it's honestly made me much stronger on the mound." That improvement in her pitching came in form of adding a pitch with some sink to it, and that change has made her one of the most efficient pitchers in the state. "A lot of people know what my bread and butter pitches are, so I wanted to add a couple more, something with some down movement, something to get them to chase a little bit," Case said. "I was definitely able to do that, and that's what helped get the job done tonight, too." Case's ability was on full display Friday, as the Blackhawks were facing a Remsen St. Mary's team that held an 18-1 record and a top 10 ranking in Class 1A. Hinton took a 5-4 win, with Case throwing the complete game. Case struck out 7 in the first 3 innings, keeping the Hawks off the board. She also reached 500 career strikeouts in the second inning. "It's everything," Case said of the milestone. "I've put so much work into everything in the offseason. I've spent hours working with coaches, and it's nice to see it come full circle. But honestly, the win is the best part." Case was also a force at the plate, recording 3 RBIs Friday night. In the circle, she finished with 7 strikeouts in 7 innings, giving up 4 runs in the 5th, but settling down to get through the final I'm sorry, I had to switch pages. Get through the final two innings cleanly. Jaden's a fighter, Hinton head coach Jennifer Jacobs said. Even this fall, we weren't really sure what the prognosis would be for her this year. And we talked about being a fighter, we talked about being a grinder, and then we talked about believing that this is in somebody's hands bigger than ourselves. I think she really believes that, and she kept grinding all off season. She did everything she was supposed to do to be able to get back out there and throw for us, Jacobs continued. This season, Case has 173 strikeouts over 124 innings pitched and a 1.26 ERA. She's also hitting .319 with the team high 25 walks. You have to stay hungry, and I think Jaden, after getting hurt last year, stayed that way, Jacob said. It opened her eyes to the fact that, hey, I could be good. When she was a sophomore, she kind of realized that she could be good. Her junior year, she got better, and her senior year, she wants to leave a legacy. Case is one of eight seniors on the team, and her leadership, along with the other seven seniors, has lifted Hinton to 10 straight wins and in 11 of their last 12 games. Friday's win also came on assistant coach Brian DeYoung and senior Emily Small's birthday. I think Kate come and they want to win every day, and that's what it has to be, Jacob said. You can't overlook any team. We have to find a way to grind. There's going to be a night where our bats aren't as good, so defensively we have to step up, and that's what it has to be. It takes all 17 to do their job. Hinton did his job with the win over a strong Remsen St. Mary's team Friday night. The win revenged an earlier season loss to the Hawks and showed the team what they are capable of doing. St. Mary's is an awesome team, and it's one of those things where we need to believe that we can compete and defeat anyone, especially going into the postseason, Jacob said. We have three games next week that we want to take care of, and then we want to turn around and do our jobs going into the postseason. The Blackhawks motto, leave a legacy, is still the mentality of the season as the season comes to a close, and that legacy includes a trip to Fort Dodge. Every single day, we come out here and we work with a big grind, Case said. Our theme this year is leave a legacy, as we're led with eight seniors. We want to leave it all out here every day, and we honestly play every game like it's our last. This win was just another part of that. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, June 26th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now go to today's obituaries and death notices. Our first one is Marion F. Slavens, Dakota City, 88, died Sunday, June 19th. Services will be August 8th at 10 a.m. at the First Presbyterian Church of South Sioux City. Edwin Hastings Lukart is spelled L-U-I-K-A-R-T, Tulsa, Oklahoma, formerly of Sioux City. Edward Hastings Lukart met his Lord and Savior on Sunday, June 12th. Just 2 days short of his 90th birthday. Graveside services with full military honors will be at 11 a.m. on Friday at Memorial Park Cemetery, 6605 Morningside Avenue in Sioux City. Edwin was born June 14, 1932 in Omaha, Nebraska. The Lukart family lived in Lincoln and then moved to Sioux City in 1947 and established Lukart Insurance Agency. Edwin graduated from Central High School in 1950, he attended Yankton College and then graduated from the University of South Dakota in 1954 with a Bachelor of Science in History. He was a member of the Beta Theta Phi fraternity. After graduation from college, he went to the Naval Officers Candidacy School. After receiving his Naval Commission in San Diego, he served at the Langley Point Naval Base in Luzon, Philippines, where he was a crypto officer. Edwin handled top-secret communications between the Pacific Fleet and the Pentagon. He did not share with his family what he did for the United States Navy until a few years ago. He will be remembered as a loyal officer who could transcribe and protect sensitive military information. After returning from the Philippine Islands, he stayed active in the Naval Reserve until 1979. He stayed active in the United States Navy and was a commanding officer of the United States Naval Surface Division in Sioux City. He would go on active duty every year for the Navy and retired as Lieutenant Commander in 1979. Edwin's mother, Minerva, taught for Sioux City Public Schools. She set him up on a blind date with her school's vocal music teacher. Edwin and Nancy Conway were married on February 3, 1963 at Crescent Park United Methodist Church and were married for 41 years. Nancy Lucart was a well-known music teacher and vocalist in the community, and Edwin enjoyed hearing her perform. He was a member of the Retired Naval Officers Association, a member of the Tryon Lodge, a member of the VFW Post 1973, and the Sioux Land Rental Association. He was a member of the Independent Insurance Agents of Iowa. He enjoyed attending Nebraska football games and helping the coaching staff with recruiting leads and information. Edwin was the founding member of Christ the King Anglican denomination. He helped pioneer St. Stephen's the Martyr Anglican Church with his best friend and beloved Father Robert Ponick. He enjoyed fishing at the beloved family cottage in Nestor Falls, Ontario. Edwin enjoyed and supported his children as they pursued their interests and academic goals, and will be remembered as a loving and supportive father. Edwin loved to play with his children, nieces, and nephews. The Claw will always be credited with making the family holidays fun. When Edwin's wife Nancy passed away in 2004, a scholarship foundation was formed in her name. Every year, one or two scholarships have been given to local Siouxland High School students studying music or music education. The Lucart family is asking, in lieu of flowers, a donation be made to the Siouxland Community Foundation in honor of Nancy Lucart at 505 Fifth Street, number 412, Sioux City, Iowa. Scholarships have been given away every year for the past 17 years. Special thanks are offered to the outstanding hospice nurses and caregivers with River Cross Hospice and Souro Medical Resort and the Tulsa VA. In addition, the family would like to thank the men who attended the men's Bible study who made such a lasting impact on Edwin's life. Thomas Richard Lofton, Lamars, Iowa, 80, died Friday, June 24th. Services will be June 29th at 10:30 a.m. Mauer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamars. Burial following services will be at Calvary Cemetery in Lamars. Visitation will be June 28th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home and resumes June 29th from 9:30 a.m. until service time. Family said goodbye to Joyce Marie Hofstadter Sandvold on Friday, June 10th. Arrangements are with Christy Smith Funeral Home's Morningside Chapel. Joyce was born in Council Bluffs on August 8, 1948, to Rudy and Ruth Hofstadter, her two favorite people in all the world. She has been most recently living in South Sioux City for the past year, and before then in Las Vegas and in the local area of Mobile, Sioux City, Kingsley, and Lawton, where she spent her life working hard, having some fun, and loving and raising three children. Joyce attended and graduated from Woodbury Central High School in 1966. She then attended cosmetology school at Tyler Beauty School and worked as a stylist in salons around the area. Joyce also gave back to the beauty industry by teaching new students and sharing her skills with many as an instructor. She was an entrepreneur by heart and purchased the Merle Norman Cosmetic Store of Sioux City and was an active owner and friend to all her customers located in the Southern Hills Mall for many years. Joyce was married to Bill Butters, deceased, for most of her life, and they had three amazing children together, Scott, Blaine, and Brian. She was blessed to be able to marry her best friend, Roger Sandvold, on December 31, 1992, but only was able to spend a few years with him before his passing in October of 1994. She has loved him forever since that day, and we are sure she was jumping for joy as she got to see his face again in heaven. Joyce loved Jesus and talked about how he helped her daily get through the hard times. When she was able, Joyce was involved at Morningside Lutheran Church in grief counseling and spent free time serving at the local soup kitchen. She loved Elvis, the color purple, teddy bears of all shapes and sizes, and popsicles were always one of her favorite treats for herself, her, and her friends that came to visit. She loved to cook, taste new recipes, sing karaoke, and go shopping on the day after Thanksgiving and Christmas. Christmas was her favorite holiday. She loved watching Hallmark the most, and it was on the TV all the time. But Dancing with the Stars, Home Makeover, and America's Got Talent were also some of her favorites to watch with family and friends. Her family and friends who know her best still remember her silliness and being full of laughter. She was generous and was always concerned about others. Joyce wanted to be there for anyone who wanted to share and needed a friend. She was a great best friend. Many of her friends and caregivers who have spent time with her over the last few years looked to Joyce as a mom and appreciated her insights and love that was given to them each day. Her sons asked that you not be sad that she has gone from us on earth, but be happy and grateful to God that she is now healthy and happy once again. We will be together in heaven again. John 11:25-26, Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never ever die. John Francis Guard, Lexington, Kentucky, formerly Sioux City, 76, died on Wednesday, June 22nd, surrounded by his family. Services will be at 1 p.m. on Wednesday at Christy Smith Morningside Chapel, located at 1801 Morningside Avenue. Interment will be in the Memorial Park Cemetery, Sioux City. The family will receive friends from 12 to 1 on Wednesday at Christy Smith Morningside Chapel. Online condolences for John may be made to the family at christysmith.com. John was born November 18, 1945 in Sioux City to Lowell and Francis Guard. He grew up on the family farm east of Sioux City. He graduated from Lawton High School and went on to earn a business administration degree from Wayne State College in 1968. In the fall of 1968, John enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. After basic training, John was commissioned and went to Officer Candidate School and became a first lieutenant serving his country in the Marine Corps until the spring of 1972. After his service in the Marines, John went to work for the United States Department of Education as an accountant until his retirement in 2017 when he moved to Lexington. John enjoyed teasing people and just having fun. He loved life and living it to the fullest. John enjoyed camping in West Virginia. He loved remodeling houses and coming up with plans on what he wanted to do. John enjoyed hiking and being outdoors and going for drives through the countryside. He had fun playing computer solitaire and mahjong. Elizabeth Shaw, Lakewood, Colorado, formerly Lamar's, 88, died Thursday, June 30th. Arrangements pending with Maurer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamar's. Kimberly K. Kim Watterson, 66, of North Sioux City, passed away Friday, June 24th. Abiding by Kim's wishes, she will be cremated and no services will be held at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Kathy A. Lance, 72, of South Sioux City, passed away Tuesday, June 21st, at a local hospital. Services will be held on 7 p.m. on Wednesday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Pastor Beth Hamilton officiating. Visitation will be from 5 p.m. until service time. Online condolences will be directed to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Kathy was born on December 2, 1949, in Winnebago, Nebraska, the daughter of Roland and Betty Thompson Hunter. Kathy was a lifelong resident of South Sioux City. She graduated from South Sioux City schools and went on to obtain her bachelor's and master's degree from Wayne State College. On June 30, 1972, she married Larry Lance in Sioux City. The two settled in South Sioux City, and to this union, one son was born, Tyson Lance. Kathy was very much a people person, and that shone through her in her work as a teacher. She began teaching in Walt Hill. She left a huge impact on the students she taught in both Walt Hill, Nebraska, and South Sioux City during her years teaching. She also worked for IBP in Sioux City. However, her passion was for teaching, and Kathy returned to the teaching ESL at South Sioux City Schools, where she retired. She was a member of the Red Hat Society, the Teachers Retirement Association, and the Tangled Yarns Knitting Group. She was also a member of the First Presbyterian Church of South Sioux City. Kathy loved visiting with people. She routinely attended the Thompson family reunions and loved spending time with that side of her family. She also enjoyed working on family ancestry and genealogy projects, as well as knitting and painting in her spare time. She was sharp as a tack, with a great memory, and always remembered birthdays, especially her grandchildren's birthdays. She loved her grandchildren with her whole heart. She was an animal lover and specifically cherished the cats she had throughout her life. Kathy was bilingual, a fluent Spanish speaker, and enjoyed speaking with others in Spanish whenever she could. Gordon Thompson, Tacoma, Washington, formerly Lamar's, 95, died Wednesday, June 22nd. Arrangements pending with Maura Johnson Funeral Home in Lamar's. Alan DeWeeden, Akron, 66, died Thursday, June 23rd. Service will be June 28th at 7 p.m., Waxwinkle Funeral Home in Lamar's. Burial will be at a later date, Pleasant Valley Cemetery, Merrill, Iowa. Visitation will be June 28th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Fred J. Fletcher, Primgar, Iowa, formerly Battle Creek, 81, died Sunday, June 19th. Services will be June 27th at 10:30 a.m. at the Westminster Presbyterian Church in Ida Grove. Burial will be following services at Mount Hope Cemetery, Battle Creek. Visitation 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Arrangements with the Christensen Van Houten Funeral Home of Ida Grove. Patricia Ida Martinik, Lacey, Washington, formerly of Sioux City, 94, died Wednesday, June 8th. Services will be July 7th at 12 p.m. at St. Michael Catholic Church in Olympia, Washington. William B. Bill Christensen of Sioux City died Monday, June 20th. No services will be held. Arrangements with the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Margaret M. McKenna, 86, of South Sioux City, passed away on Saturday, June 11th, at her residence. Service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel in Sioux City. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Private interment will be at Logan Park Cemetery. Margaret was born on August 23, 1935, in Sioux City to Bert and Ruth Bloomfield McKenna. She worked as a clerk for Lippman's, for TGNY and Holiday Inn. Memorials in Margaret's name may be directed to Siouxland Active Generations. And that concludes the obituaries for today. We'll now move to a business story with the headline of Mixed Use Development. North Sioux City property will have commercial space and apartments. A new mixed-use commercial and apartment building is under construction in North Sioux City. Construction on the over 23,000 square foot two-story building called Soldrac Place, situated on Soldrac Drive just off of Exit 2 on Interstate 29, has been ongoing through most of this year. Project manager Bryant Lickness said the developers are hoping to have the multi-million dollar building finished in September or October. The ground level of the building offers 11,560 square feet of space for commercial tenants, with space built to suit, plus a 2,216 square foot common area on the first floor with a gym and a kitchenette, according to a property listing. The developer is Kevin Heiss, president and CEO of North Sioux City-based Riverside Technologies, Inc. Lease signing is underway. We've gained a lot of interest, Lickness said. Plans originally called for space for six commercial tenants, but one common commercial tenant took two spaces. Other commercial tenants could, if they do so desire, occupy more than one space. One of the first ground floor tenants will be Rock Valley, Iowa-based People's Bank, which is planning to open a 2,855 square foot location there this fall. This will be the bank's first North Sioux City location and the first in South Dakota, and its 10th location overall. It will employ four or five people, a People's Bank spokeswoman said in an email. People's Bank, which has been in the Sioux City market since 2018, has been searching for what they call a pocket of opportunity. North Sioux City stood out as one of those pockets, People's Bank CEO Al Vermeer said in a statement. The new housing being built, redevelopment of the former Gateway Complex, and the beautiful Dakota Valley School District all stood out to us, along with several more projects in various stages of development. Lickness was not able to publicly identify any other commercial tenants planning to move into the building. The building's second floor will have a total of 10 two-bedroom, two-bathroom, approximately 950-square-foot apartments. North Sioux City civic leaders have said that South Dakota's low-tax environment has attracted new businesses and residents. But, as in the case in most places, the city's housing supply has struggled to keep up with demand. The more housing that we can get in North Sioux City, the better. Housing's been in a very high demand, said Andrew Niles, Executive Director of the North Sioux City Economic Development Corporation. And now our next one, El Baba joins Mercy One as electrophysiologist. Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center has announced that Mohamed El Baba, MD, is joining the team at Mercy One Siouxland Heart and Vascular Center as their new full-time electrophysiologist. Electrophysiology is a detection and treatment of a potentially life-threatening or abnormal heart rhythms, also known as arrhythmias, Mercy One said in a press release. This can cause people to experience symptoms such as fluttering in the chest, chest pain, fainting, or dizziness. Electrophysiologists help to determine the cause of an abnormal heart rhythm, locate the origin, and decide the best treatment to help you get back to living your best life. Mercy One Siouxland Heart and Vascular Center has a fully equipped electrophysiology lab. The heart, and especially electrophysiology, is pure physics to me, which I love, Dr. El Baba said in a statement. The speed, the pressure, the valve, it all goes back to that. Dr. El Baba is a skilled at performing procedures, watching, including watchmen, pacemakers, and other cardiac devices, and is passionate about electrophysiology, heart failure, AFib, and arrhythmias, Mercy One said in its press release. Now we move to Dear Abby. Dear Abby, recently my oldest and dearest friend since kindergarten talked about renting a home in Puerto Rico for her family and mine. We talk often and have remained close over the years. I consider her family a part of my family. She recently informed me that she went ahead and booked the trip with her sister-in-law, her nephews, and her parents without saying a word to me about it. I was extremely hurt, and when I told her so, her answer was, "Well, I didn't make the arrangements. My sister-in-law did. There will be small children, and I know you don't want to do that." I had told her previously that when my husband and I go on vacation, we prefer adult-only resorts. I'm disappointed and angry. Should I end our friendship or just let it go? Signed, excluded in New York. Abby responds, if this is the first time something like this has happened, let it go. If it continues to happen, and I doubt it will, reevaluate the friendship then. Dear Abby, my husband passed away 7 years ago. My oldest son, Danny, is 29 and is getting married. He has one brother, Adam, who is 19, and they have always gotten along. But I'm really upset that Adam wasn't asked to be in their wedding party, at least as a groomsman. I'm sure my husband, if he were alive, would have had a talk with Danny about this, especially because all four of my husband's brothers were in our wedding party, as well as his best friend. I'm upset that I have to bring it to Danny's attention, but I need to address this without making him mad. What's your opinion? Signed, Matter of Scruples. Abby responds, Dear Matter, scruples may have less to do with this than budget restrictions or Adam's young age. By all means, mention this to Danny, but after that, refrain from meddling. Your wedding was yours. This one is Danny's and his fiancée's. Dear Abby, my son, my only child, lives with his fiancée. His marriage, which produced my oldest grandson, has finally ended, and he has two boys with a fiancée. She and I have never seen eye to eye. When my son and I argue, she prevents me from seeing my grandsons. It makes it very difficult for me to bond with them, for fear she will keep them away forever. What should I do? I'm actually holding back my emotions because I'm scared. Signed, On Eggshells in Washington. Abby responds, if you and your son have a functional relationship, aside from the occasional disagreement, take this up with him and be frank about it. His fiance should not use the children to punish you. However, if your son won't put a stop to what she's doing, then it makes sense to protect your emotions and to not feel guilty about doing it. If that means guarding them where your son's children are concerned, that would be the healthier course of action. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, June 26th. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for listening.